And we are back on this Tuesday, March the 17th, 2020, St. Patrick's Day 2020, but that certainly is not the talk today. And it would have been primary day in Ohio, but that is not the talk either because the coronavirus is going on. We are doing our regular primary show today because there certainly is no lack of politics to talk about. Joining us all morning for the three-hour broadcast, we thank her so much, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, is live in the studio. And now we are being joined via telephone by a man who certainly knows Mary Ellen very well. Mary Ellen was the treasurer for his run for governor just 2 years ago. He's not doing many interviews these days, but we are so glad that he is joining us today because we would love to hear what he thinks about everything going on. He was the Democratic nominee for governor back in 2008. He is Rich Cordray. Rich, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. Glad to be with you and glad to be with Mary Ellen.
Oh, hi, Scott. Rich.
Hi.
Hey, Rich, I wanted to ask you, what do you make of what's going on today primary-wise in Ohio? How do you think that was handled yesterday?
I actually think that when they went to a court and the court ruled that they should not overturn the primary, not halt the primary, you know, on the eve of the election, that they should have respected that court decision. You know, Arizona, Florida, and Illinois all going forward with their primaries today. The court ruled that it's not clear that this will be any different or any better several weeks from now, and that they should go ahead and hold the primary, and there was no legal basis for putting it off, and I think that that court decision should have been respected.
Is there any legal repercussion that you know of that Governor DeWine and the people who halted this election could face?
No, I don't think that there is at this point, because they did halt the election. The Ohio Supreme Court has apparently upheld that action. It's not clear to me on what legal basis it's being made, but it's because of this concern about the virus. I understand that concern, but I do think we need to balance what the risks are. And, you know, people's constitutional right to vote is also preserved under our Constitution, and that's being set aside on the basis of a last-minute judgment, and I think that it was wrong.
This is obviously the Democratic primary for president. A lot of people I heard last night saying that this was kind of a voter suppression thing because people don't know. Should they go vote? Should they not go vote? People are confused now. Do you think there will be a whole lot less people voting because of the way this was handled?
Well, we don't even know when and how people are going to vote now. It's thrown into massive confusion. The entire election machinery was ready to go for today. Many people have early voted, and I assume their votes will be counted at some point. Others, we don't know when we're going to vote. We don't know how we're going to vote. That's all up in the air. There's no plan for this. There's no plan in place. So I don't think that it was intended as a voter suppression thing. I think it's part of the reaction to the coronavirus. And it was not only the Democratic primary today, but Republican primary as well. And not only for president, but for all the other offices that are on the ballot that everybody has prepared for and everybody has campaigned for, and people were ready to go.
Do you think there would, because this was the question, would there have been a general fear of people being at the polls? Would people have been in danger? Because it's my understanding it was the health department that shut this down in the end, said it's a health concern.
They did say it's a health concern, and I don't dispute that that's the basis on which they acted. But there, is quite a bit of legal. They're supposed to go to the legislature to get these things changed. They should do it in advance, as has been done in Georgia and Louisiana, not on the eve of the election. There was an awful lot of confusion that was created yesterday. It would have impeded the election today. That's true. But it's not clear now that things will be much different in April or May or June or wherever they now think they're going to hold the election. And I think it's, they've traded one problem for another.
How do you think the coronavirus situation since last Thursday has been handled? The last election, you were the Democratic candidate for governor. It very easily could have been you as governor right now. How do you think it's went?
Well, I do think that the governor and other public officials have more access to information about the health aspects of this. So it's hard to second guess. But at the same time, there's a balancing of risks that you need to make here. One risk that they're focused on to the exclusion of all else, it seems, is the risk of transmitting this virus. But there are other risks that they're creating and incurring, such as shutting down all economic activity in the state of Ohio. That is going to hurt a lot of people. There are a lot of people who will lose jobs as a result of this. It's just starting. We will see it happen over the next several months. And when people lose jobs, they will lose health care, and some will lose their homes, and they will be out on the street. And that will create risk and health risks as well. There are people whose health will be hurt and people who will not receive care, and some will probably die. And those risks need to be balanced as well. You can't focus only on one risk to the exclusion of all the other risks you're creating.
That being said, and obviously we are not privy to the information that the governor and other people in Ohio have at this point, but what would your plan have been at this point to balance the worry of spreading a viral infection, but also not putting the state in a bad economic position?
Well, I think that the original approach that several governors took was to limit large gatherings, and they had put large gatherings at 250 or 100 people. Shutting down restaurants was not part of the original plan. The plans have changed, obviously. They've become much more draconian. People are actually being told not to engage in most any economic activity, and that's going to hurt tremendously. There will be repercussions from this felt for many months and maybe many years. As we have now created a recession in this country that will be unfolding over the spring and summer and probably the fall.
The press conferences that are going on every day where we learn how many people have it, how many people possibly could have it, what's changing every day, what's being shut down, having these televised and on television every day, do you think this is a good thing? Because that's about the time of day that everybody heads to the stores and panics a little bit.
Well, I do think that you need to be as transparent as possible. It's a messy process to have this unfold and have the estimates be changing all the time. But I do think that you can err on the side of stoking fear as opposed to calming fear. And I'm very concerned about, as I say, the effect on economic activity, which is going to hurt a lot of families, and it is going to lead to loss of health care. Going to lead to loss of housing. People will lose employment. Their financial situations will be deeply upset. Some of that may be unavoidable, but I think that those risks have to be taken into account and balanced with the other risks as well.
Let me ask you this, because this is the question. With the bars now closed, with the restaurants closed, with the schools closed, last night we saw the closures of gyms and movie theaters and so on and so forth, these things that are economic boost to the state. With all those things being closed, would there have been any way to leave those open and not spread the virus? Because I assume they were shut down to not spread it. Could we have left them open and still been okay medically, in your opinion?
Look, again, it's hard to make these judgments when you don't have access to the most up-to-date health information, and I think average citizens like myself do not have access to that information. On the other hand, the virus is spreading. We're seeing it spread. What they're trying to do is limit and contain the spread. I do understand that, but all of that needs to be balanced against the risks that they're creating for families of economic pain and dislocation, which will lead to, as I said, loss of jobs, loss of health care, loss of housing. Many families will be hurt, and it will lead to health impacts as well. And that needs to be balanced in the equation. And I don't think it's sufficiently being balanced in the equation right now.
At this point, and the final question on this, at this point, I say we don't know the medical information, but when this plays out and in a couple weeks people don't get that paycheck that they normally would have gotten because they're not at work anymore, what is that going to look like? Because I don't hear a whole lot of talk about the financials of this on local, state, or national level at this point.
It's going to look pretty ugly. We had a former economic advisor to President Trump yesterday estimating that there could be more than 1 million jobs lost in the next month. A recession like we saw in 2008 and 2009 will lead to many millions of jobs being lost, including hundreds of thousands in Ohio. There will be people who will not be able to pay their mortgage, people who will not, because they don't have a job, they will lose their health care, people who will be behind in default and go into bankruptcy. We will have people with mental health issues. We will have people who will commit suicide. These are all real-life aspects of an economic catastrophe, and we are moving into one very shortly.
Mr. Cordray, I want to ask you this because this is the first time we've gotten a chance to speak with you, and we thank you for coming on since the election of 2018. Going in that night, all the pollsters, people in newsrooms all thought you were going to be the next governor. That's what the polls showed. What do you think happened on election night 2018?
Well, you know, politics is a funny business, and it doesn't always work out as you expect, and that's why we hold elections. There was a very big turnout in counties where Mike DeWine did well, and I do think that that was attributable to Donald Trump's rallies and his the issues he stirred up about the caravan. You know, immigration was not an issue in the governor's race. It was not something that either Mike DeWine or I talked about really at all. It was Donald Trump who talked about it, but it was one of the issues most on voters' minds when they went to the polls in 2018. So we got an awful lot of votes on our side, more votes than anybody had ever gotten who did not win the governor's race, more votes than John Kasich got when he was elected both times. We were pleased with the turnout, pleased with the strong support, but Mike DeWine got more votes, which is why he won the election, and I tip my cap to him for that, and that's why he's the governor and I'm not today.
Hillary Clinton has talked recently in her new documentary online about the days after the election, thinking she was going to win, the pollsters thinking she was going to win, and then she didn't, and how rough a night that was, and the weeks after it were not all that pleasant. Election night, where were you? What did you do, and what did you do in the weeks after that?
Well, I was at the hotel in Columbus where the different gatherings were taking place with my family and my campaign staff and friends. And, you know, it's a very tough thing when you work all year or more than a year toward an election and then you don't win the election. It's a very hard thing. It's, a lot of people don't participate in politics because they, you know, don't want to suffer the disappointment of that. And I would say that, you know, it's a very hard thing to find that you have not won. But you have to, you know, go on. Life goes on. Everybody's life goes on, including yours. And you bounce back. That's given me the time, and I've appreciated the time, to write the book that I've just published called Watchdog, which is about the work that we did at the Consumer Bureau in Washington and why it's important for consumers and consumer finance all over the country to have solid consumer protection.
Is this a good time with the current situation of the country and the subject of the book for that to come out? Do you think this is something people need to read, considering the economic times we might be heading into?
Well, I do think that when we have an economic recession, and we will have one, it's inevitable at this point, that consumers get hurt. People who live on the margin, who don't have $400 set aside for an emergency, and this will be an emergency for many people, there also will be scams and frauds that will occur. They're already occurring around the coronavirus scare, scams and frauds about how to access medicine or treatment or testing. And it's very important that consumers be protected, especially at a time when the economics are bad for people and they're really up against it. And many people will be in the months ahead.
One of the things that was talked about after the last election and during the last election for governor in Ohio was there was a significant age difference between you and Mike DeWine. You were quite a bit younger than him, still, you know, a young man in the terms of politics. Would you ever run for office again?
I certainly might, yes. It's something that I will consider. I think I have said before, I think I've somehow developed an idealism about public service over the years. I've never lost it. I think Mary Ellen and I share that view that public service is a noble thing and something worth devoting your life to. I also got that from Senator Glenn, who I worked for, and I think I got it from my parents, who were public servants in a true sense, not elected officials, but people who did their best every day to raise the quality of life for others, which is what public service is all about.
I'm going to bring Mary Ellen in here in a second, because I know you guys have a very close relationship. But just one more question about the election of 2018. When you look back at it now, is there anything you regret? Would you have done anything different? Is there something that sticks out in your mind?
There really isn't, Scott. I mean, I've thought about this, obviously, and it's not much use to Monday morning quarterback yourself, but you learn from it. But I would say that I thought our campaign did an outstanding job. It was reflected in the fact that we got 2 million, almost 100,000 votes. Mike DeWine did a better job in that campaign, and again, I tip my cap to him for that. But I can't think of what we would have done that would have changed that result.
I do have one more question, then we'll bring Mary Ellen in. This would have been primary day in Ohio presidential-wise. Have you decided yet between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders?
He's endorsed Joe Biden.
You endorsed Joe Biden?
Yes, I had endorsed Elizabeth Warren earlier on, and when she dropped out of the race, I endorsed Joe Biden, and I believe that Joe Biden would make an excellent president. He's somebody who can get things done. He will be a calm presence in a crisis as we're in now and would put the government back on the right track, which I think this country badly needs.
It certainly is an interesting time. How do you think the president's handling this?
Well, I think he's been shaky and erratic, and I also think that the president had done some things that have made this crisis worse. For example, dismantling the national security unit that was designed to deal with pandemics. He's said that he didn't know anything about that happening, but it was on his watch. It was in the White House. If he didn't know, he should have known. They defunded places like the Centers for Disease Control, and HHS has been in a scramble throughout his presidency. And so they were not prepared for this as they should have been, and the federal government has not been as responsive as it could have been, and now they're trying to make up for lost ground, but it's very tough to do that effectively.
34 minutes past the hour here on this Tuesday morning. You're listening to WWGH Radio. The guest is Rich Cordray, former Democratic candidate for governor of the state of Ohio back in 2018, also 40th Treasurer of the United States. Mary Ellen Withrow with us live in studio all morning. Mary Ellen, you're a longtime friend of Rich Cordray. What would you like to talk to Rich about?
Well, I tell you, I'm anxious to read his book. I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but I'm going to.
But thank you, Mary Ellen.
Yes, I want to ask you what has happened to your Consumer Protection Bureau that you were so great with. What's going on? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I do. I follow it pretty closely. I would say, first of all, the book that you mentioned, which is called Watchdog, is all about consumers. And who are consumers? It's you, me, Scott, all the listeners. Everybody in every room in America is a consumer, and they deserve protection in the marketplace against people who would cheat them or take advantage of them or mistreat them in some way. And the Bureau, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, was designed and set up by Congress to address those issues and to stand on the side of people and make sure they're treated fairly in the marketplace, which is what we all deserve and what we all have reason to expect. The Bureau, under new leadership, has not been as aggressive as it was when I led it. There's no question about that. They're taking fewer enforcement actions. The rule that I had put in place to restrict payday lending, they are working to roll that rule back. various other changes they've made, some of which I disagree with. On the other hand, it is the case that the Consumer Bureau is here to stay. Even its most dedicated critics have now acknowledged that. And it does serve an important role in our government and has important work to do. And part of my reason for writing the book Watchdog is to provide a roadmap to what we did and how we did it and how it could be done again in the future, and to give the Bureau a prod as to what it's doing right now.
You know, I'm glad to hear that. Are you in touch with Elizabeth Warren at this point, or have you been in touch with her?
Yes, I am. She and I are pretty close friends.
And yes.
I was involved with her presidential effort and also just remain in touch with her on the issues of the day, where, as you know, she's very active as senator from Massachusetts. And yes, she's a friend.
Yes, I watched her campaign, and she really was so worked so hard at it, and I thought she did a really good job running for president.
Yeah, I would agree. She was a tremendous presence in the debates, and I think certainly changed the trajectory of that race. And I think her ideas, her plans that were so well received on many fronts, they're very ambitious plans, but she has you know, big ideas about the future of this country. And I believe that some of those ideas will necessarily be put in place over the years ahead. And again, I'm optimistic now with what looks like, you know, very possibly Joe Biden is consolidating his likely hold on the nomination. I think he will be a great candidate in the fall. And I think Joe Biden is a great fit for the state of Ohio as well.
Yes, I think he is too. And I'm glad that he's doing well, because I'm concerned about the momentum with the stopping of voting here in Ohio and what the momentum might do to his campaign. It's so hard for candidates that are in a big primary. How are they going to continue on for a couple of months or whatever it is to try to campaign? And you know, we've got a big race for Jim Jordan's seat as well. And I'm concerned about that seat too. So I think that the whole thing is very difficult when an election is postponed like this.
Well, particularly at the last minute with no real warning. I mean, they could have done this last week and, you know, probably it would have been better received. But on the eve of the election, when everybody's ready to go and the voters are ready to cast their ballots and they've made their arrangements, and it's not at all clear, you know, a month or 2 months from now how things are going to be different. So, again, I think it's quite unfortunate, and I think that the voters are disserved here.
Yes, I do too. I have never heard the court refused like that before.
Yeah, they went to court thinking that the court would bless what they're doing, even though it's not based on any law. The law said the election was to go forward today, and when the court refused them, they went ahead anyway with what they wanted to do. I think, again, it's unfortunate.
Yes. Well, it's good to talk to you, Rich. I wish you well.
You too, Mary Ellen.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And my best to everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, and hopefully we can talk again soon. And how can people get the book, Watchdog?
The book Watchdog is available. You can get it through Amazon. You can get it through Barnes & Noble, or pretty much wherever books are sold. You can either get it or order it there. And it's a good read. It's all about, again, how our families are affected by consumer issues, things to look out for, how things have changed over the last two generations, how much credit will be used today, and also how important it is that we be protected in their economy. And I think that that's exactly why I wrote the book.
Rich Cordray, former Democratic candidate for governor of Ohio in 2018, and maybe a candidate for something in the future. Can't thank you enough for calling in this morning, Mr. Cordray, and hope to hear from you again soon.
Always my pleasure, Scott. And best to Mary Ellen and all of our friends up there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Rich Cordray. Now there, Mary Ellen, I think we learned quite a few things.
Yes, we did. Yes, that was a great conversation.
So he might run again, sounded...
Yes, I wonder what he's looking at.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh, right.
Now, did not, maybe this is just me, but he did not seem to be all that impressed with the job that Governor DeWine is doing right now.
Well, you know, an opponent that you've, do you remember one of the debates where they were talking about how Elizabeth Warren attacked Bloomberg? And I think it was Chuck Todd said, well, you know that Bloomberg had supported her opponent, Scott, when he ran against her. And he said, do you ever forgive an opponent? And I said, and I thought that was so interesting because it's something that just sort of stays with you.
I can imagine. It could be a rough way to go.
Yeah.
Interesting that it seemed to me, and I don't want to put words in Mr. Cordray's mouth, but that there would have been a way possibly to do this to not shut down the restaurants and not do things of that nature.
It's pretty severe. That's severe.
Well, and I wonder this too. I tend to, like I say, we all want what's best for people's health right now. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know why we waited till the night before to try to stop the elections. Now, people will say that it was because things got worse. But I don't know.
They didn't get that much worse, did they, in Ohio?
I would think that on Sunday, when you closed the bars and the restaurants, that if you had said that then, it might have been easier to take than doing it 14 hours before.
Yes, that was the thing that was so difficult. I mean, people were preparing to get up at 5 o'clock so they could be at the, you know, work on the election board. All those people that were going to work on the election board today, or election, were planning on this, and some of them probably showed up.
Well, and I bet they did.
Yeah.
I bet they did. And the thing of this is, and I hate to say this, but we're talking about money again, those people get paid.
Well, it's not that great.
Not a huge pay. It's not the big money.
No, and that's not big money, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. June 2nd, I guess, is where we'll be headed.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if that's finalized. That's just what I'm hearing from, that's what they want to do, June the 2nd.
Yeah.
Will it matter at that point? I mean, won't we have a candidate by June the 2nd? All other primaries are going on, Rich said.
Yes, right, evidently. So, well, all we know is we'll have to see what happens.
Well, in the case of the Jim Jordan seat, now, June 2nd, we're not going to know now who the Democratic opponent is. That'll only give them a certain amount of time to prepare for the November election.
Yes. Well, we used to have our primaries a lot later. I don't think, did we ever have them in June? I know we had them in May. And I thought it was too early having it in March, but that's what everything was geared for here. So that's what made it so hard to change it at the last minute.
I thought I had heard that you had endorsed one of the three who was running against...
Yes, I endorsed Mike Larson.
Yes. Why was he the one?
Because I thought he would be able to beat Jim Jordan.
We've talked about this. Do you think Jordan's beatable?
Yes.
More this time than other times?
Yes.
Any particular reason?
Many reasons.
What would be the main reason?
Well, we've got a really good candidate in Mike Larson. It goes to his experience with Jackie Spears and his background. I think that he could win.
What do you make of the Jim Jordan situation with the, well, let's just broad topic it here and say the Ohio State wrestling issue?
Well, it's something that's hanging over him, and he has that to defend, and I haven't heard him defend anything really much on that. So it's something that's out there, and when you're running for office, you have to take care of things that are out there.
Another primary that will now be delayed is the Reinicke-Atkinson Republican primary for Senate, and that has been one of the nastiest primaries I think we have seen in a long time. Have you made anything of that primary?
No, I'm not. I'm really not up on that. It's something that I've only concentrated on the Democrats running.
Is there a Democrat this time who you particularly see as an extraordinary candidate?
Yes, Mike Larson is that.
Mike Larson?
Mm-hmm.
He has a background in comedy and also certainly, I think, public speaking because of his comedic background. Do you think that will play well in debates and things of that nature, being a public figure that he has been?
That's about who?
Mike Larson.
Yes, I that's correct. That I do think that.
That he has been there.
Yes.
It's an interesting thing right now because we are not going to go out and vote today. And you've talked about the momentum. Do you think that possibly this could affect... If the primary were held today, would Biden have won, in your opinion, in Ohio?
Yes, I think... Well, I think so. I would have guessed that he would win.
Do you think now that this could change that?
No, I think he'd still win, but you're just guessing. Everything is a guess, you know.
We brought up the name there, and there was another person who has dropped out of the race, was Michael Bloomberg. What mm-hmm. did you make of Bloomberg coming in, getting all this attention? A lot of people thought he was going to be the guy, and then after a couple debate performances, he was gone and out to endorse Joe Biden.
Yes. Well, he thought that Joe Biden was having trouble, and that's the reason he got in the race. And he really spent a lot of money, and he was very impressive. But as with all the others, he dropped out. And I think... I think all of it was good. All of the people that ran added something. I like to see people participate in politics because the more that try to win elections, the healthier we are. I mean, we don't want to subdue anybody running for office because that's important. And it's a hard decision to make. I mean, it takes a lot of nerve to run for office, and you got to give people credit.
Being that this is an election year, that this is all happening with the coronavirus, will it have an impact in November?
Well, I don't know, but I hope not, but it very well could. I just don't know what it will do.
The Olympics, I don't think they've officially canceled them yet, but if we're still going on here in August...
Yeah.
I can't imagine that that's going to happen.
Yes. We've seen things canceled that we never thought would be canceled.
Well, and that's the unprecedented nature, I think, of this whole thing, is that the NCAA has canceled their tournaments. The NBA is not playing right now. Preseason baseball is not going on. Things on a local level, the kids are not out playing, the schools are out. I don't know what the impact of schools being out for the rest of the year could possibly do.
Yes, that's right.
Graduation parties?
Yes, yeah.
It's really turned in to a sticky situation.
That's the best description.
Yeah, that's where we are at this point. Something interesting has been going on, though, if people have been paying attention on Facebook and to the Historical Society, Marion County Historical Society website, they are doing a documentary on your life.
Yes. It's been exciting. I've been really busy. They've been filming me. Last week, they filmed me all week. And thank goodness they did it last week and not this week, because things have changed so much. But it was really where I had to search into my brain for information that I was wanting to give, and hoping that I got everything across that I wanted to. But it's I haven't seen it yet, but the people that I worked with, I think, are doing a good job on it.
Were there things about it that popped back in your mind that you hadn't thought about for a long time?
Yes. Oh, I tell you, I was researching. You stop to think about, say, one particular thing, and other things will pop in your mind that you hadn't thought about for years, really.
When you look back at it now, and with this documentary coming out fairly soon, I would imagine, what do you think was the highlight? Is there a high moment in your career?
Well, there were many high moments. There were some low ones, too. I think that I had a wonderful career, and I just really enjoyed what I was doing, and I feel very fortunate that I got to do it, you know. And I'll tell you something: if the people of Marion County hadn't elected me first, I couldn't have gone on to do all those other things.
Marion County, for the most part, has tended to the Republican side. Yeah. You're a Democrat. What do you think it took to win here as a Democrat and win consistently for a long time?
Well, I campaign very hard. I think that's the first thing you have to do, is you don't take anything for granted, and you try to accomplish things that will make a difference, make life easier. I said government should not make things more difficult. They should make things easier for people. So that's what I always tried to do, and I think I did.
When you were going out to campaign, how rigorous is that? How many hours do you have to put in?
Well, you put in as much as you can possibly do, because that person, you keep going until you can't go anymore, and then you do another one, because that person might be the vote that you need to win. We've had some very close races here in Marion County this last election, where our one person won by one vote and switched the council from Republican to Democrat.
When you think about that, and that did happen last election, a city council seat, first ward, Kai Meade won by one vote.
Right.
And because of that one vote, that district went from, council seat went from a Republican seat to a Democratic seat. And because of the way the rest of city council went, city council became Democrat, all on one vote.
Right.
And people say their vote doesn't count.
And I tell you, I won the primary in my first run for state treasurer by 2,434 votes. And that is close. Stop and think about that. From 88 counties, 2,434 votes.
It's interesting. I was thinking about you the other day when the presidential primary was kind of dwindling down. And again, the question came, and it's come up now because of Joe Biden saying he will choose a woman to be vice president. And also, I think he said put a woman on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. But Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, Tulsi Gabbard, there were women that people could have voted for in the primary, and yet none of them did well. Is there still a problem with electing a woman president?
Yes.
What is the problem?
I don't know. They're just afraid to trust a woman with the responsibility.
Do you think this is going to change quickly?
No, it's taken, it's been 100 years that we got the right to vote. It hasn't changed yet.
Wanted to talk about the Bill Clinton situation. There's a new Hillary Clinton documentary out. And in that documentary, for the first time, Bill Clinton really talks about the Monica Lewinsky scandal. And he says that the reason he did it, essentially, was because of the pressures and anxiety of the office. Here we are, more than 20 years after that happened. Is that an acceptable reason?
Well, I don't know that. I'm surprised that he gave a reason. I'm sure that there were several reasons that that happened. And you know, it's amazing that they still talk about it as much as they do. It was a serious situation at the time, and the government was in a shutdown situation when that occurred. So, you know, whatever, if he said that, then I will believe it.
It's an interesting thing, because another thing that was talked about in that whole spiel was that he was president, and yes, it impacts him to the degree that that will always be with him, but his wife, it followed her through her entire political career. A lot of people feel that was one of the reasons she did not become president, mm-hmm. was because of this situation. Certainly has impacted Monica Lewinsky. She forever has been a punchline and not been able to get the jokes or the jobs that she's wanted and been made
right.
a joke of.
Right.
It was an awful situation.
Yes, it really was. You know, it's been interesting. Lately, they've had Gene Sperling on, who was his economic advisor. And I remember talking to Gene Sperling about my linked deposit, thinking it probably could be used nationally. And it was discussed. And, I saw him on TV yesterday again. He's been on a few times lately. And the economy, when Bill Clinton was president, the economy was excellent. All the numbers were in the right place, and you can't take that away from him.
Will that be in the first paragraph of his obituary?
I don't know. It's just coming up constantly, especially when Trump was being impeached. It was mentioned constantly about him, and his presidency was so much more than that. He was a good president, and it's a shame that that's all that's remembered.
Nixon lived how many years? 20 years after Watergate and resigning from office, yet it was still there. Mm-hmm. When he died, that was still the thing.
You don't get rid of it. No, it stays.
You don't. Do you think it will impact President Trump in the same way?
Yes, I think so.
You never get away from it.
No.
Mm-mm. What did you make of the outcome of that impeachment?
Well, it was strange. Everything about it was strange because, first of all, the Mueller situation was ineffective because of Bill Barr's announcements of what it was, and it really had no effect. And then the impeachment, it ended up in kind of a non-existent situation as far as I was concerned, and it seemed like everything just had no effect on the public. Trump was doing things that were wrong, and something should have been done about it, but nothing was done about it. And our government, I thought, had a better protection system than what occurred this time, because and it all came back to the Senate responsibility is where it all stopped. They let him get away with all of this, and it's become a natural thing for people to think, oh, that's okay to do because he's done it and he got away with it, and that's not right.
It was an interesting time. 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, is the guest this morning. We certainly thank Rich Cordray for coming on this hour. We've got one more hour this morning, but we do have to step out for news and weather, so enjoy that. And we'll come back and talk for about another 45 minutes about everything going on in the world. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Alexander Hamilton is going off the $10 bill in 5 years. So long, Alexander. And he is going to put a woman on mayor on 2020 on the 10th. And this summer, they are to poll people.